To all who come to this happy place, welcome.
Hello, and thank you for joining us on this very special first episode of The Backside of Water, a podcast that delves into the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind your favorite Disney attractions. I'm Alex Stewart.
And I'm Harris Nonby.
How you doing, Harry?
Oh, better than ever.
Oh,
how are you?
That's what I like to hear. Yeah, I'm doing great. I'm super stoked about the fact that we're finally doing this.
Me too, after much technical difficulties and head scratching. It's finally happening.
I think that the listener at home, notice how I use singular because I'm pretty sure it's only my mom listening. But I think that a lot of people should know that we're doing this via satellite. Harry lives in Austin, Texas, and I live up in stormy Denver, Colorado.
But we both share a common love of Disney, so that's why we're doing this podcast.
Well, and I think that we need to clarify what kind of love of Disney that we have, because there's many different kinds of love.
That's
true. In the Disney world, and they all stem from the Greek of agape.
That's not true.
We both really love the idea of the genius of Walt Disney himself, the creative mastery that he approached every single project with. And that's what this podcast is really delving into. We're not super keen on we're not the lovers of Disney who walk around wearing like a Piglet t-shirt and, as Harry says, a grumpy fanny pack.
Yeah. Or we wouldn't really wear matching t-shirts as a family to the parks. That's not really us. It's cool if it's you. But we like the narrative and the story and the design that goes into the rides and the attractions. Sorry, the attractions. Wow. And the shows.
I think I need to clarify on our terms of stories. There are two distinct stories that we're going to be talking about. The first kind of story is the story of how the attraction came into existence. That's the rich history portion. We're going to kind of delve into... I keep saying delve into a lot, folks, and I'm sorry to say that. So I'm just going to erase that from my vocabulary. I tend to say delve and essentially a lot. So if I say either of those throughout this podcast, you have a right to send me hate mail. that might have opened like a really big can of worms. But we're going to be talking, like I said, the rich history of the inception of the attraction. Another thing that we're going to be focusing on is the themed story that frames the attraction. A lot of people don't realize that each attraction in the Disney parks comes with a story, with a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah, the story from start to finish when it comes to the creation of the attraction and from start to finish in the actual attraction. It's all a design experience. And that's really the heart of this podcast is the storytelling, because Al and I are both just in love with storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and I think that that's what is going to be cool about this podcast is the not only what the show is about, but also what the structure of the show is, which I'll talk about right now. We're going to break this show into series, not necessarily seasons. So each series is going to focus on a specific land or area of the park. We're going to begin that series with an episode showcasing the awesomeness of the land itself, and then each episode in that series after will focus on a specific attraction in that land.
Exactly. So for example, if we were starting our New Orleans Square series, then we'd begin with an episode about the area of New Orleans Square, and then the next episode would focus on something like the Pirates of the Caribbean. We're structuring it in this way, not only for audiences at home to enjoy, but also so this podcast can be used as your audio guide to the park. So when you enter into a land, you can put your headphones on and start our podcast and listen as you explore the given land and its attractions.
I think that's a cool idea, and I think the reason why we did this is because there really is no podcast that exists in that realm, and so we're really doing this as something we can use for our friends and family when we go to the park. So we'd love for all of you to join as well. So I think, actually, Harry, nobody really knows exactly who we are, so maybe we should introduce ourselves?
Maybe we should. Let's do it. I thought it would be fun to do my intro like a 1980s wrestling promo and then actually tell you about myself. You ready for the wrestling promo?
I'm more machine than man, and I'll crush your head like a can. Some people call me Rick the Brick from West Nevada, but I must call me the Backyard Barracuda, because I am lean and mean on the water slide. But when I'm in the ropes, brother, there's only one thing you can call me, and that is World Heavyweight Champion of the World.
Actually, my name is Harrison Ownby. I work in a sea of cubicles, and I live for escapism. I went to college in Los Angeles, and while I was there, my friend Al talked me into shelling out for a day pass to Disneyland, and I was hooked after that. Soon became an annual pass holder, and I would love to become that again if I ever live in Florida or California. I love Disney parks because they are the embodiment of dreams realized, and I aspire to bring the same wish upon a star magic and optimism into creative endeavors in my own life. I will always believe that when you wish upon a star, your dreams come true.
Since Harry did his introduction as a wrestling intro, I kind of feel like I have to step my game up a little bit. So I'll do mine like a 1930s newscast. Here we go.
Alex Stewart, man of luck, man of questionable beginnings. Not much is known about him other than that he was born in a tree hut nestled amongst the palm fronds of Adventureland. After his parents went missing, young Stewart found himself being raised by the feral felines that prowl the grounds of Tom Sawyer's Island. As Stewart grew into a man, he became a proud Jungle Cruise skipper, a miner on Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, a tiki bird wrangler, and finally a high school film teacher. It was last reported that he was living in Denver, Colorado with his lovely wife and newborn son. Nothing else to report at this time. Keep your ears to the skies.
Wow, Harry, those are some really swell introductions. Or really embarrassing, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah, more embarrassing than swell, but you can be embarrassingly swell, probably, would be the category that I would
choose. I feel like that's how I live my life. I think it's actually a good time to reveal the first land that we're going to be covering on this podcast about the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind your favorite Disney attractions. Take it away, Harry!
And now the moment we've all been waiting for. The
what?
First land we will cover is... Universal Studios, or wait, no, Adventureland!
Yeah!
Yeah!
I actually wouldn't mind doing something about Universal Studios, especially like the history behind the Backdraft ride. That seems like it would be really exciting.
Well, there's a movie called we should just live watch Backdraft and record our reactions.
We're just going to do a live stream of our podcast of watching Backdraft. It looks hot. Oh, no. Don't open that door.
Backdraft.
And then we cut to the scene in Hugo where Jude Law gets all burned up and we remember, that's why you never open a door in a library.
That's why you always leave a note.
So let's talk about why we chose the land, Harry.
We chose to start with Adventureland because as you come into the park and just take an immediate left, it's right there. So you're going to be able to walk in and start your tour right away and just hit play and start at Adventureland.
I think another reason why we started with Adventureland is the fact that this is without a doubt my favorite land, and I don't want people already getting upset and thinking that we're biased towards Adventureland. But get upset because I'm extremely biased towards Adventureland because... Go ahead.
No. Well, I love New Orleans Square, so I'm really excited for that. But yeah, to each his own. Nobody cares about me. No, I'm just kidding.
See, nobody cares. Jurassic Park reference.
Yeah.
Okay, so without any further squawking from us, why don't we start the show rolling?
Adventureland, a wonderland of nature's own design. Here you can stroll through a Tahitian village lush in its exotic beauty. Marvel at the unusual exhibit of South Seas products displayed at the bazaar. Or take an explorer's boat on a journey through tropical rivers where lifelike wild animals add thrills and excitement to your trip to the far ends of the world.
What you just heard was the description of Adventureland found in the original Disneyland guidebook back in 1955. But the story of Adventureland starts much earlier than that. In fact, it starts with a documentary about, of all things, seals. That's right. Way back in 1948, Walt Disney Studios released a film called Seal Island. Nobody thought this film was going to be a success, but lo and behold, it won the 1949 Academy Award for the Best Short Film.
She seems to sense that there's trouble afoot, and of course her first thought is for her pup.
The success of Seal Island sparked an entire series that Walt called True Life Adventures. Think of these films as vintage Disney nature films. Now, let's fast forward to the early 50s. Walt Disney, an amazing storyteller himself, wanted to find a way to take people into the stories that they had seen in his True Life Adventure series. He wanted a place where people could become immersed in the mystery, the grandeur, and the danger of untamed nature. Thus, the inception of True Life Adventure Land. Walt included this world of adventure in concept drawings of a new amusement park that he had been dreaming of since the early 1930s, a place he called Disneylandia. Now, Disney brought a brilliant team of people together under a secret division of the company, and he named it WED Enterprises. Believe it or not, WED stands for Walter Elias Disney, Walt Disney's full name. Kind of a cool little tidbit. This team included a man by the name of Harper Goff. Goff was born and raised in the small town of Fort Collins, Colorado, just a little bit north of us here in Denver. He started working for Disney after they met in, of all places, a model train store in the early 50s. Now, Harper Goff was tasked to come up with the visual designs for Walt's park, and if anyone was qualified for the job, Harper Goff was the man. He had worked with the military during World War II to design better and more efficient camouflage for the soldiers to wear in battle. He also worked in film for years before he started working with Disney, and actually designed sets for famous films like Casablanca.
He's looking at you, kid.
Harper Goff drew inspiration for True Life Adventureland from famous films of the time, like The African Queen, starring Humphrey Bogart and Katharine Hepburn. This film follows the story of two people that find love while traversing the treacherous, danger-laden waterways of Africa. Goff loved the adventure, the romance, and the thrill of this film, and he incorporated it heavily into attraction concepts that he had created, things like the Jungle Cruise. Goff expertly incorporated Tahitian, Asian, and African architecture into True Life Adventureland so to enhance the exotic feel of the area. Outside of being an artistic and creative genius, Goff was also a very talented banjo player. He played with the famous Disneyland Dixieland jazz band known as the Firehouse 5 Plus 2. Try to say that name five times fast. The band also featured other Disneyland greats like famed animator Ward Kimball on trombone. When these guys weren't creating Disney magic, they were entertaining guests out in Disneyland with their jazztastic awesomeness. As a tribute to the great Harper Goff, Disneyland dedicated a window to him over the bazaar in Adventureland. If you're visiting the park, you're going to be able to see the window and read the words Oriental Tattooing by Professor Harper Goff. Below that, you'll see the words Banjo Lessons written in honor of his banjo plucking skills, as well as the fingerprint he left throughout the area of the park. The True Life Adventureland Walt Disney and Harper Goff had envisioned was actually supposed to be located on the east side of Disneyland, where Tomorrowland is currently located. But during the construction of Disneyland, a man by the name of Bill Evans convinced Walt to move the land west. Now, it would take a pretty confident dude to tell Walt Disney himself to move the jungle west, but Evans was the man to do it. He was a very well-known floral expert in Hollywood and was known as the exotic plant connoisseur to the stars. Right now, all I want you to be thinking about is Little Shop of Horrors. Evans first worked with Walt after Disney had hired him to landscape his backyard and railroad at Walt's famous Carrollwood home. Walt was so impressed with Evans' landscape design work that Disney hired him to design all the landscapes inside of Disneyland. Evans had an especially huge mountain to climb when it came to creating a jungle in the middle of an orange grove in Anaheim. During the early stages of Disneyland's construction, Bill Evans was surveying the area and noticed a grove of eucalyptus trees on the west side of the park, directly behind where Main Street USA was being built. Evans knew that this cluster of trees would only enhance the feeling of the jungle, so he set to work convincing Walt that the jungle needed to migrate west. Walt finally agreed, and Evans was able to create a realistic, lush, tropical rainforest that helped transport guests into the far reaches of the world. Now, Walt had built Disneyland in less than a calendar year, a feat that many claimed was impossible. But on July 17, 1955, the first guests entered into the world of Adventureland. On opening day, guests rode the Jungle Cruise, the only ride attraction in Adventureland at the time. But they also had the opportunity to shop the day away in the bazaar. Over time, Adventureland would also get some other great attractions. In 1962, Adventureland welcomed the addition of the Tahitian Terrace, which is now Aladdin's Oasis, as well as the Swiss Family Treehouse, which is now Tarzan's Treehouse, followed by Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room in 1963. For a time, Adventureland was also filled with live steel drum music playing above the tropical imports. You could also hear the squawks of Zoe, a real live cockatoo who still currently lives in the towers of the Jungle Cruise, and can every once in a while be heard singing its beautiful tune over the exotic streets of Adventureland. So, now we just talked about Tahitian Terrace. I think that it's something that younger or newer Disney fans may know nothing about. So, Harry, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about this area and why it's so sad that it's gone?
With pleasure. A specific kind of melancholy washed over me when I learned about the Tahitian Terrace because I felt like I missed out on something magical that I never knew existed. Before Aladdin's Oasis, Adventureland had a Polynesian-themed restaurant called the Tahitian Terrace. It operated from 1962 until 1993, and it was a dinner show. Big deal, you say. There are a million shows at Disneyland. But the Tahitian Terrace was wildly popular and very special. Imagine this. You wait to get in one of the two scheduled dinner shows. The sweet smell of pineapple blends with the savory smoke from the coconut shrimp and teriyaki steak. You sit outside, and the tables are arranged around a waterfall and a small stage. A gorgeous tree sprawls above you, built by Imagineers and laden with thousands of handcrafted leaves and fiery colored flowers that bloom perpetually. The food is delicious. Barbecued ribs, fried shrimp, marinated chicken. Then the waterfall parts right down the middle and real hula dancers come out. There are authentic dancers from each Polynesian island performing unique dance rituals from their home. You're enchanted. But like all great storytellers, Walt Disney balanced enchantment with a sense of danger. Mysterious men soon occupy the stage and dance with fire, standing in it, throwing it over their arms and legs. And of course, in the tradition of their neighboring attraction, they tell Jungle Cruise quality jokes. To finish the show, they take unsuspecting audience members on stage and teach them how to hula. Add desserts like pineapple upside down cake and rum cake, and suddenly, you're devastated because they replaced it in 1993 with the Aladdin's Oasis dinner show. I'm still not over it, and I've never even been to the Tahitian Terrace. The Aladdin's Oasis dinner show lasted only 2 years, and now the area is just the Aladdin's Oasis show, sans dinner. Now, I have nothing against Aladdin's Oasis, but I can't help but feel it was driven less by artistic integrity and more by, hey, we have a hit with Aladdin, low-hanging fruit, corporate synergy, blah blah blah. But there is hope that they may bring it back one day. In 2005, they included a Tahitian Terrace in Hong Kong Disneyland. It's a quick-service restaurant without a show, and apparently they serve Indian food, so it's slightly different from the original experience. But still, I hope that Disneyland Park Management will reopen it in Anaheim, because I would shamelessly follow a pineapple upside-down cake with a Dole Whip.
Adventureland would go largely unchanged until 1995. Adventureland made way for Indiana Jones and his new discovery, the Temple of the Forbidden Eye. With the addition of Indy came the re-theming of the Jungle Cruise and the addition of brown fedoras and bullwhips being sold in the bazaar. For the release of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull in 2008, the skyways of Adventureland came alive with an Indiana Jones action extravaganza that included Indy battling it out in an epic climax on the bridge of Tarzan's Treehouse. I worked at the park at this time and would always get a little sheepish every time Indy would pass by me backstage. Yeah, I know it's not the real Indiana Jones, but still, it was the thought that got me all bashful. Now finally, Adventureland is a place filled with an awesome past, a very nostalgic present, and a very, very promising future. It, like the real jungle, is alive and well, constantly changing, yet remaining a place you're guaranteed thrills. It is indeed still the true life Adventureland that Walt Disney had envisioned over 60 years ago. And now the story of Adventureland! I think that this episode was a perfect way to set up the series. I think that actually the show itself, not just this series, I think it's very apropos that we start with the Land of Adventure as we are all taking a journey through adventure ourselves on this podcast.
Exactly. And Sorry. Hold on just a second, Al. I was spacing out about, did you ever get to talk about why your Adventureland, you liked it? You know, I think I cut you off with my stupid New Orleans Square stuff, and you never got to say that you actually worked as a Jungle Cruise skipper and you worked in the Tiki Room and stuff.
Well, yeah, I covered that a little bit in my intro, and I don't want to take up a bunch of people's time just talking about my 72 hours worth of stories that I have about
right.
working at the happiest place on earth. But yeah, that is one of the main reasons why I worked at Disneyland was so I could work in Adventureland. And maybe one day I'll actually share the story of how I got fired from my job cleaning pools and decided to take my low-hanging head into Disneyland and apply for the job in the first place. But that is for later. Tell us about our next episode, Harry.
The next episode is one of my favorite attractions. It's something that always brightens my day when I'm having a bad day. We're excited to cover the Enchanted Tiki Room next. So, in the meantime, please give us a review of this podcast on iTunes, good, bad, or otherwise. Say, Al is terrible, but Harrison is amazing.
Compelling.
Yeah.
It's compelling. It's true.
Harrison should get a Pulitzer while Al should be in prison.
In debtor's prison! So yeah, also email us with questions, comments, or concerns about Harry's halitosis at thebacksideofwaterpodcast@gmail.com. Also, you can check our Instagram. Get ready for this because it's a really tough one. _backside_of_water. Over there, you're going to see companion info and pics. I just want to let everybody know that the Backside of Water is taken on Instagram as a username in like 6,000 different variations. So us being able to get something that is even somewhat similar to the Backside of Water was a straight up miracle.
Al had to sacrifice a goat at midnight to Bahamut. to make that happen, Bahamut gave him 4 underscores. Actually 3. But yeah.
You shall use no more.
Anyway, so you can visit our website too. It's backsideofwaterpodcast.tumblr.com.
Oh gosh. So speaking of Instagram, we actually ran a contest.
Alright. Let's try that again.
Okay. So sorry. So broken up by the bottom mutt. So speaking of Instagram, we ran a little contest on our profile in honor of the Disneyland 60th anniversary. And the winner of the contest was the Darkside_SC.
He must have had not as good of a deal with Bahamut. Just a 1 underscore. A 1 underscore deal.
Oh, this guy has an awesome account that mashes Star Wars and Disney together and pins it all together. If you see his account, you'll get the pin pun. And I got to explain, once a skipper, always a skipper when it comes to puns, I suppose. Speaking of which, when we asked the Dark Side which Adventureland attraction was his favorite, he said the Jungle Cruise.
Woohoo!
Yeah, he said, and I quote, "It's a great way to relax and take a boat ride with humor and awesome cast members who do their best to make you feel like you're in the jungle. I love how they decorate for the holidays, and it makes my family and I happy every time we ride. So for me, it has to be the Jungle Cruise." Very good choice, the Dark Side.
I agree. Good choice. So do yourselves a favor and follow him on Instagram, darkside_SC.
Oh, my. Well, thanks, folks, for listening. And as always, as you exit, please watch your head and watch your step.
And if you miss your step and hit your head, please watch your language.
Goodbye.